This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Thank you to our audience out there for joining us. We know that you guys have got lots of choices as to the thousands of different podcasts that get released, it feels like every day. And we appreciate your guys' loyalty and hanging out with us. Not too different than the last probably 40 or so podcasts. We are joined by a special guest today. I always love it when I get to talk to somebody that has been on both the tech side and working for brands. And so today is one of those special guests that I'll introduce you to. But his name is Kyle Mark. Kyle, why don't you introduce our audience to who you are first, and then we'll talk about kind of what you're doing with the brand that you're most recently with.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, my name is Kyle Mark. I'm the CIO for WowWorks. We are the parent company of SaladWorks, Fruitables, The Simple Greek, and Garbanzo Mediterranean Fresh. Growing as well, we're actually in the process of an acquisition of two other brands, and those will be announced shortly. But I've been in restaurant technology now for about the last 15 years, and spent the last 6 months or so with a POS company called Q, and recently joined WowWorks about a month and a half, 2 months ago.
Very cool. Very cool. Prior to that, mostly restaurant stuff, or, you know, when you talk about POS, just for our audience that may not be familiar with kind of a little bit of that background, or quite frankly, not even be familiar with WowWorks. I mean, you guys are all over the place, and that part's been really cool and obviously growing. But for those that aren't familiar with your background, why don't you go back a little bit farther just so they understand kind of why you're such an expert on the things that you got going on.
Yeah, so I've done everything from outsourced IT virtual CIO type work with companies like FTR Hospitality and Datum Technologies, as well as director of technology for restaurant groups anywhere from 10 units up to 50.
Very cool. So WowWorks, for those that are not familiar, like I said, you guys have had a good amount of press recently. Talk to us a little bit about what's the format. What's the format of the restaurants themselves? Like talk to me, are they casual dining? Are they fine dining? Are they fast casual? Are they fast food? Are they all of the above?
Yeah. So right now we're all fast casual, all healthier for you food. So, brands like SaladWorks, obviously it's a, healthy salad based. We have salad, soups, sandwiches, paninis, then Fruitables, which is our, definitely younger demographic, acai bowls, toasts, smoothies. And then we have two Mediterranean brands, in The Simple Greek and Garbanzo Mediterranean Fresh. All of them are fast casual. So that's, kind of our niche right now, and including the hopefully two upcoming brands.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I know that talking pre-show, we wanted to kind of talk about what you inherited when you got there. I know that you were working with WowWorks prior to coming on full-time with them. But why don't we talk a little bit about kind of what you inherited? What did you walk into from the brand perspective when you started working with them most recently, just from a tech stack perspective? You'd alluded to the fact that WowWorks has acquired these brands, which typically means that there's a lot of disparate systems out there. There's a lot of disparate choices that have been made. And so why don't you talk through a little bit about where that came from, what you experienced, and then we can talk about how you're really, driving the innovation and driving the standardization projects that you guys have got going on.
Absolutely. So, four brands, four completely different tech stacks. And, I first started working with WowWorks about a year ago now, and they had just acquired the fourth brand of The Simple Greek. And between the four brands, we had Q, Brink, Revel, and Aloha for POS. We also had different online ordering systems for them. And actually, SaladWorks itself had two separate online ordering systems because they had two POSs throughout the company. Loyalty was all over the place between Level Up, Punch, Patronix. So, it was kind of a blessing in disguise though. We were able to, still doing an RFP later, but we kind of had that like real world experience with all four, all the different pieces of the puzzle. So we were able to kind of you know, use that real life experience in making a decision. And what we ended up doing, the original plan was to kind of create a system where everything could tie in. So if we acquired a brand, it wouldn't be a huge tech stack change. We'd be able to, you know, integrate them into reporting and make everything work together. Pretty quickly, we decided, though, we wanted to go with one WoW way, which is what mm-hmm. we're calling it. So one WoW tech stack. So it took a few months, but we narrowed it down to the pieces of the puzzle we wanted. And we're really starting with what we're considering a very solid foundation. And we're starting with POS, loyalty, and online ordering. So for our POS piece, you know, we decided on Q Point of Sale. You know, working with them, they've been incredible partners for us the past, you know, 2+ years with SaladWorks. We signed with them for all of our brands. We then decided on Punchh. You know, we really think Punchh is best in class, and their loyalty programs, their apps, everything there. So that was, you know, a major piece of the puzzle for us. And then finally, we landed on Olo for our online ordering. Obviously, you know, I don't think there's anyone out there that's better than them in online ordering and what they offer as far as dispatch and Rails and making the in-store operations as seamless as possible with all the orders coming in from outside. So, you know, those have been the three core pieces. We're currently in the process of implementing them across all four brands. We're in different places right now. We've finished with SaladWorks. Fruitables is about halfway. Garbanzo's is, you know, in the middle. And then the Simple Greek, we should be done in about a month, month and a half. So those are both, you know, are all of those are major pieces that we're, you know, really happy with. And once we get those implemented, we're going to be able to kind of add on to that foundation. So starting with the core and then looking at, you know, alternatives, you know, back office reporting, data analytics, stuff like that.
Very cool. Well, and I know we'll get into kind of where the future is holding for you guys. You know, we talked pre-show about kind of the core foundation, which I know oftentimes starts at the center of the store with the point of sale, and then you start to do those add-ons. Talk to me a little bit about the change management process, because I'm certain, share with me, all corporately owned stores, corporate and franchise, just all franchise, because that makes a difference for those tech people out there. When you're a franchise versus I'm buying everything myself, like, you know, and I know the answer, but I'd rather you share it with our audience to say, this is what it looks like, because I think helping learn how you guys implemented some of the change management is critical to measuring success and actually getting successful deployment. So when we talk franchise, mostly franchise group, mostly corporate owned?
Heavily franchised. I would say, I think we're over 90% franchise.
Okay, so now you're playing with people's money when you tell them that they need to replace their Aloha system or their Rebel system or, you know, their online ordering system, or they built an online ordering system and their uncle is the guy that wrote the online ordering system. And so
Right. Talk
to me a little bit about how you got the buy-in, Kyle, because I guarantee you it's not only your decision. You had to play with finance, you had to play with franchise operations, you had to play with, you know, you had to talk to the ops group. You know, I'm certain that there's a lot of constituencies that you had to serve. So talk to me a little bit about how you went through that process, because you guys are implementing a decent amount of change while it's still the core and kind of the one WoW way. There's a lot to what it is that you're doing, because you're changing out the center of the store and you're impacting a lot of people.
Yeah, no, a major change. And I can't give enough credit to our franchisees. They've been great through this entire process. It helps when, you know, a lot of them weren't exactly happy with their previous, you know, systems. You know, there was a lot of discontent in POS and online ordering and loyalty. So, you know, being able to show, especially what worked so well with SaladWorks, it was, you know, we had it pretty much there. We made a few changes with Olo especially, but we were able to show the difference to the franchisees. Mm-hmm. And show, like, you know, if you add in Rails, you're saving labor, not manually entering in your third-party orders. If you have dispatch, you know, you're opening up the world of delivery, so extra revenue. And then you know, one of the major things we're looking at right now is virtual brands, and, you know, running extra brands out of our same restaurants to expand that revenue as well. So that's been a major player in talking with the franchisees. It's key talking points. But we've also, you know, worked with finance and our business development. We've implemented basically a single tech fee. Mm-hmm. So they're not, you know, our franchisees aren't signing a contract like themselves with Q or with Olo or with Punch. We're doing it all through corporate. We're controlling that whole tech stack. They're not paying 10 different bills. They're paying, you know, one fee to the franchisor. And that's made it, you know, a lot more palatable, I think. We've also worked with our partners. Q has been great in this, but doing a HaaS model, very minimal upfront costs, you know, basically installation. And I think that's a major win for the franchisees.
Yeah, I think, and I want to dig into a little bit, and I don't know how long, you know, how many times you've read some of those articles, but there's, I mean, there was a lot going on, you know, when McDonald's was trying to drive their franchisees to doing the kiosks. I don't, did that come into your guys' executive boardroom conversations as it related to, you know, forcing versus encouraging, you know, because at least what I have found, Kyle, is a lot of times, you know, you can prove the value and you're going to get 20% of the people that are going to be early adopters and be like, you know what, I hate my Aloha system. It's been out, you know, and I'm not picking on Aloha. Every point of sale system has its own set of challenges. I hate my Aloha system. It's 10 years old and I need to replace it anyway. So make me first on the list, and you get your early adopters. And then you got the people that are like, no, I am going to use this system until you force me to do it. And sometimes that gets really touchy as it relates to, I'm not doing well. I'm not, you know, I've worked in my day job with a lot of franchise groups, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge from time to time. And I love the idea. And I do want to dig in a little bit to kind of how you guys made the financial side palatable. But did you guys have those discussions about how much do you encourage versus how much do you guys force? And what does that look like?
Yeah, we absolutely did. We really didn't want to come in heavy handed. You know, I think that franchisee-franchisor relationship is always, you know, a little, it can be strained at times. And, you know, we've been lucky with great franchisees that, you know, they understand that we listen to them and, you know, but they also understand that, you know, they've bought into a system. And the reason they've done that is like, we have experience. We, you know, we're actually using, you know, multiple brands to like learn from one and implement the other. And, so there's a major benefit there. And I have to give it up to our ops team. They've been great in discussing that with the franchisees. If something does come up, you know, we've had multiple calls with like individual franchisees who come up with questions, or, you know, concerns about this, the change. And, usually after, you know, 20, 30 minute conversation, we can, change their mind. It hasn't always been that easy, obviously, but,
yeah,
you know, for the most part, it's been, you know, a great experience, and there's always going to be one-offs that, you know, it's difficult, but for the most part, it's been great.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I'm going to make a statement, and then I'd love to get your take on it. Some of the biggest brands that do franchises, the, you know, the Subways and the McDonald's and the Burger Kings of the world, you know, the tens of thousands of stores, huge, they've got huge buying power with some of these tech companies, and they're able to either have their own point of sale and drive that consistency and truly get a one size fits all contract. Or you've got a brand like Jersey Mike's, who's written their own point of sale, and they kind of have their own tech stack. And so they can kind of drive that. This is what you're going to use. Talk to me a little bit about how the negotiations and the partnership went, because you've got loyalty from Punch, who's owned by Par. You've got Olo, who has their own kind of play into the restaurant space and has their own pseudo point of sale with Rails and Dispatch. And then you've got Q, who's one of the newer tech stack companies out there. One, how did those negotiations go? And then how did you get the consolidated contract stuff and get legal through those pieces where you can offer a one size fits all tech stack to the franchisees? Because We at CBS have recently had a couple of clients that are franchise group-based groups do that. And it quite frankly, has been remarkable how much adoption you get, because there is no secondary and tertiary, you know, negotiations with a second company. I love that idea, but I'm certain it wasn't easy to get all of those players to talk with each other and to come to one single term and one single price and all of that. And again, even on the restaurant side, I'm guessing that certain brands do more volume and less volume and more transactions and less transactions. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys were working through that, because I think it's really innovative and a great idea.
Yeah, it was definitely a long process. I mean, we were finalized negotiations with the last partner, I mean, 2 months ago, honestly. So it's been, you know, and we started last April. So it's been, it was a long process for sure. I do have to say, you know, our legal team and ops side is great. We have, you know, amazing FDDs, which definitely helped us there. But I mean, as far as, you know, I think when we started with Punch, they weren't owned by PAR yet.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So that was also interesting, that conversion. I don't think it played too much into our negotiations because that was done fairly early on. We knew Punch was our preferred partner, so that was an easy change. And then Q was great working with on the negotiation side with, you know, you mentioned it, they're newer, they're smaller. I don't want to say we took advantage of, you know, our size with them, but it helped for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know where we want to be a great partner for them and basically be kind of that lighthouse client. We want to show them, you know, show other potential Q customers, like, this is what you can do with the system. It's great. And, you know, they've worked well with us on making that possible for them too. So, and then Olo is, you know, they're great. There's not a ton of negotiation with them, obviously.
They're the 800 pound gorilla. So you get what you get and you pay what you're going to pay.
But I think you're going to pay what you pay, but you're going to get a lot for it.
Yes. No, absolutely. Noah's a great guy. And I've been around with Noah. I mean, as have you, I think a lot of people know him, and quite frankly, it's not just him. He's got a fantastic team. You know, they are the 800 pound gorilla, but they do so much. It's crazy how much value you can get if you adopt their full tech stack.
Absolutely.
Well, and I'd love to throw it out because it reminded me we were in the middle of negotiating with Wisely, something similar, and then they got bought by Olo. So very, very similar deal where we're like, oh, we got this thing just about inked. It was off to the lawyers to get signed, and then we find out the acquisition right actually ahead of a trade show, I think, and it was like, what in the world? It might have even been FS Tech last year. It was
FS Tech last year.
FS Tech, we were talking about
the day before.
Yeah, because I ran into Mike, the founder of Wisely, and I'm like, dude, really? Like, you couldn't even tell me about this? He's like, I wasn't allowed to tell you. Kind of like you're not allowed to tell me about those two brands that you guys are going to buy. It's kind of in that same boat, but I think that's a really unique value prop as a franchisor, to really come not just with the recommendation, but come with a solution that you know is going to be valuable for them from a tech stack perspective, which you kind of already alluded to that. But then finding a way to use your guys' buying power, no different than you guys do with US Foods or Cisco. It's just, it's so funny because for whatever reason, I have not seen that in the franchise community without it being the biggest of the big brands. And I don't, you know, with your experience in the past, have you seen more and more people, or when you talk to your contemporaries, have you seen more and more people kind of going down that path where they're negotiating not just a master contract, because the master contracts, I think almost everybody has done, but wrapping that into one technology fee or however you alluded to it, I think that'd be really, really interesting for our team to hear and the people that are out listening.
Yeah. You know, I think it's becoming more and more popular. You know, even with talking with Olo, you know, they've set up a whole new billing scheme for corporate billing. Okay. That does exactly this. So beforehand, it was each store was being billed separately. Olo has set up specifically for situations like this, corporate billing, where corporate gets billed everything, and then they do the internal billing. So it's obviously becoming more popular if Olo and other companies are doing that. You know, with Q, SolidWorks had been doing that for, you know, 2 years prior to this whole situation. They had, you know, a similar agreement with them prior, and then when we acquired the other brands, we decided to move everybody over to Q. It was obviously a negotiation on pricing and everything, but the same, you know, corporate billing structure existed. And then, you know, Punch was more than willing to help us out with that. So it was, from the vendor side, it was extremely easy. And I think it's not only an easy sell, but it's a good sell for the franchisees, especially new franchisees coming into the system. If you can tell them, like, hey, you know what your fees are going to be every single month. It's going to be a single bill. You're not going to have to worry about, you know, ACHs from four different companies. It's going to be a single fee from the franchisor collected at the same time as royalties. Like, that's an easy sell, I think.
I love it. You gave me an idea for some business on the other side, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So there's a couple things that I'd love for you to dig into a little bit, because you've talked about it a couple of times, but for those that aren't familiar with all of the products that Olo offers, you know, Olo really got their name initially for being online ordering, and they were online ordering integrated back with point of sale. But they've, in the last 10 years or last 7 years, whatever, however long it's been, they've launched a couple of different products, and you've brought both of them up. And I'd love to have you talk about the what and the why behind both Rails and Dispatch for those that aren't familiar, because I do think that they are critical, especially in the fast casual space and the fast food space, to have some product, and quite frankly, even in casual dining, to have something to solve this problem. And Olo definitely has. So why don't you give our audience a little bit of understanding about what both of those products are and why you chose to put those into the part of the initial rollout that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so Rails and Dispatch, they were really kind of the key factors in our choice of Olo. I mean, their online ordering, like white label product, is great. Mm-hmm. But that's not like what makes them different, right? It really is these two other products they offer. And so Rails is basically the third party pathway into the POS. So if you have third party partners like Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub, now Grubhub, luckily, they basically ride the Rails and they use the same integration path as Olo's online ordering does to get into the point of sale. So no longer, you know, I've heard it called this multiple times, but you no longer have tablet hell in the restaurant.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You have like 3, 4, 10 tablets on, you know, next to a point of sale and dinging and ringing and all that. So basically you've cut labor, right? You can reuse that person that was entering in all of those orders, usually hours a week, hours of labor, repurpose them into, you know, for us, building the salads, building the bowls, making the pitas, whatever, repurpose that, get higher sales. And, you know, don't have to worry about, oh, we missed that order, or we typed it into the POS wrong, or we made it wrong. Like, everything now flows to either Kitchen Printer or KDS directly from those third parties. That was major for us, especially, mm-hmm. You know, we're in the process of rolling out virtual brands. So, you know, if we have 3 virtual brands at a SaladWorks, multiply those tablets by 3.
Yep.
And that's, so the easier we can make that, the more time we can save, the more labor we can save. It was kind of a no-brainer for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me talk a little quick, real quick about Rails, because Rails is fantastic and there are other solutions out there that do what Rails does. And so for our audience out there, if you guys didn't hear what Kyle said, is that tablet hell and the impact on operations, the impact on sales, the impact on labor is significant. So if you're not on Olo and you don't want to do Olo, find one of the other aggregators that's going to take your third-party delivery and get rid of all of those tablets and integrate it back with your point of sale.
And we looked at those, but really for us, the game changer in Rails was the menu management.
Yep.
We are only managing the menu one time through Olo. Mm-hmm. We're not having to like go onto Uber's website and DoorDash's website and Grubhub's website and manage those menus separately. They all ingest the menu directly from Olo. So menu management time is cut down significantly. Mistakes, mismatches, everything like that is cut down. So that was kind of the game changer for us. You know, obviously there's other providers out there that offer, you know, Rails like systems, but you're managing it on your online ordering platform. Then you're managing it on the third party still. So it's, there's a difference there for sure.
No, there is. And the other piece I would say is eventually, and I know it's not quite there yet, but throttling and making sure that your kitchen doesn't get slammed once it's all coming through one pathway, you know, for all outside of the four walls stuff, whether you're going directly to the website mm-hmm. or using third party, having them all go through one platform helps to really understand, what's going on and help to throttle the kitchen or not throttle the kitchen or, you know, whatever. So, I'm going to flip over to Dispatch real quick, just because I think it's critical that people understand what is Dispatch and why would you use Dispatch and why would you roll out Dispatch and what does Dispatch have to do with technology? You're chuckling on video, but like I love it because there's so many people, I think, you know, you and I live in the tech world, but so many of our listeners are either operators or their owners. They have no idea what they can do with technology today to really make their operation simplified. So,
yeah, Dispatch is basically the system that Olo provides that allows you to use a third party partner as if they were in-house delivery, right? So, you know, you have a guest that goes onto your website. Let's say they go to SaladWorks.com and they click on order online. And normally before you would just say, okay, pick up in store at this time. Now we have a delivery option where, you know, they can click deliver, put in their address. They pay a delivery fee, but it's not, they're not paying the elevated cost of like Uber or DoorDash. They're, you know, you see all their different fees. We charge, you know, a single fee right now for Saddleworks. It's $5.99, for example. So, basically, and it uses the third parties. We use Uber and DoorDash currently to deliver to the guest. It's still our customer. A major benefit of this over third party is we own that data. You know, if you, you know, utilize Uber or DoorDash for delivery, that's great, but they're, the customer is their customer, right? They own the data. You don't get any of that. With Dispatch, you get the delivery and you get the data, which is extremely valuable.
Yeah. Well, and you're still using those third parties to actually deliver the food,
yep.
But you get the data and you get to hold control of the customer.
Yeah. And we had franchisees that, you know, they had in-house delivery drivers. You know, they would deliver within like a 5 mile radius or whatever and charge a nominal fee. And I can't tell you how many times over the past 6 months someone was like, oh, you know, hey, we need to turn off our delivery for the next 3 weeks. We don't have a driver. You know, we can't find anybody to work. Well, you're taking the labor question out of it. You don't have to keep that driver on. You don't have to worry about insurance for their car or if they're delivering for you on, you know, on the clock. And that's all taken care of. Right. So it takes a lot of pressure off the operator. It gives you that extra source of revenue, which everybody needs right now. And, you know, the bigger picture for us was the data.
I love it. I'm going to ask you to dig in a little bit to a secondary piece of tech that you talked about. So you guys decided to go with Punchh for the loyalty portion. And I think you said that you guys are using Punchh's app, but if that's not true, correct me there. Talk to me a little bit about what, why not build it yourself? Why not use Olo's app? Why not find somebody else out there that does that? And secondarily, Kyle, what are you guys hoping to get out of the loyalty? Because loyalty really is a result. It's not an app. It's not a piece of technology. It's a result of having guests come into your brand more often. Talk to me a little bit about why did you guys choose Punchh to go down that route? And what are you guys hoping that the franchisees are going to experience with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll preface this by, you know, our marketing team was definitely they were the decision makers on Punchh. We vetted the technology and made sure that was great and what we needed there. Maybe we can get to set up on the call with our marketing team, but, you know, I think, you know, for us, loyalty is, it really is about data and being able to remarket to our, you know, not only our best guests and the guests that keep coming back and making sure that we keep them coming back and make them great ambassadors for our brand, but also helping drive those customers that come in maybe, you know, once, twice a month. If we can get them in another one or two times a month, that's huge. And that's really what we use our loyalty for. It's, you know, Punchh's app. You kind of asked now specifically about why we went with their app. You know, with what they can do with Olo's API now, it's a seamless app. You can't tell if, hey, this is a Punchh app or, you know, we've used other systems in the past where you log into the app and it's very clearly their app, right? It's that loyalty provider's app that they just happen to put your branding on.
Yep.
And you can go between multiple brands and it's the same exact app, just different images.
Yeah.
With us, you know, it is a little bit more custom on Punchh's side with their online ordering API use of Olo. It's a seamless experience for the customer. And that was really what was key to us. Also, speed of, you know, deployment was huge. Creating our own app, we looked at it, but that is a long process. We don't have the experience coding for Olo and making sure that works. And it's a longer process than of getting it through Olo's checks and making sure it works with them versus Punchh, who has done hundreds of these apps by now, right? So that was a major decision for us.
And I was privileged enough. I got to have dinner a while back with the founders of Punchh, and it was kind of cool. Right after the acquisition, it was kind of interesting because it was like, oh, so you know, because now they're kind of partially competitors, but not really. But like, you know, they're like, oh, we still want to integrate with you. I'm like, ah, but you're owned by somebody that competes with every day. But it was just kind of interesting talking to them about kind of how they viewed the world of technology and how they viewed the world of guest engagement, which was kind of cool. So I'm going to let you pontificate about the future, not just of what you guys are planning on doing, but talk to me a little. I mean, you threw out some virtual brands. You know, I know we talked about virtual versus ghost. How do you guys think about it as a WildWorks brand? And tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing to have guests engage with your brands. So, you know, how do you guys define a ghost kitchen versus a virtual kitchen and a virtual brand out of an existing restaurant? Talk to us a little bit about that and how you guys have thought about that. And quite frankly, why have you guys chosen to move forward in those ways?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way we think about them is the more the merrier, right? Like for us, we've partnered with, I think, three different ghost kitchen brands. I say it because Ghost Kitchen is a brand itself now, but you know, we've partnered with them. We just made a announcement a few weeks ago with Wing House out of Florida. You know, they're now providing our salads out of their kitchens to third parties. For us, like virtual kitchens or virtual brands versus ghost kitchens, you know, we don't think they're mutually exclusive. The ghost kitchen side has been great for us. It helps us get our brand into physical areas where we're not necessarily there. So when we do expand, we at least have name recognition. We've, you know, seen great success with that. I mean, ghost kitchens and so we're using ghost kitchens, which used to be GK Canada, I believe, Combo Kitchens and Reef Technologies. There are three main partners right now. We've seen, you know, major success with all of them. And I think it's really going to help us expand into these new areas.
I love that.
The other side is the virtual brands. So right now we dipped our toes into the waters with our first virtual brand, which was Soupworks. We've been running it out of SolidWorks for a while. It's not been at every location, but it was just kind of a test for us to see how it worked. And it's been, you know, successful everywhere we've put it. We are in the process right now of developing multiple brands for each one of our brands. So, you know, SolidWorks will have, you know, different salad type brands and soup brands. So we, you know, serve soup in all of our SolidWorks.
Okay.
Fruitables will have, you know, other smoothie bowl type brands. And our Mediterranean brands, that is, you know, there's a plethora of different brands that we can put in there, right? Mm-hmm. Different gyros, stuff like that. And we're looking at all different types. So like, you know, we may have something that is definitely more price conscious. So, you know, smaller salads with, you know, less complex toppings and then also like high end, nicer salads that, you know, are the same par as our SolidWorks salads.
Got you.
So every, you know, we want to hit as many different price points and, you know, customer groups as we can out of a single brick and mortar store.
And how are you guys choosing to roll those out? Since you guys are 90% franchise, do you wait for the franchisees to say they want to move forward? Are you guys driving that? You know, talk to me about what that rollout looks like, because I can only assume that some of them want to do it. Some of them are like, I've got too much business and I don't have time to take on different packaging and different, you know, it's too complex or whatever else. Talk to me a little bit about your decision-making and the organization's decision-making. Not, I mean, I know you're technically responsible for the tech stack, but you've got to make the tech stack work as it relates to that. So you've got to know about it prior too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've looked at it. We have a couple of great franchisees that are, you know, they're willing to do this. We've got a franchisee who is literally built separate lines for third parties and online orders. So he's ready to go. And I think if we can show them, like if we can show the other franchisees, every single one of these every single one of these virtual brands is a extra revenue maker. And it's not going to cannibalize on your other sales. It is additional revenue. I think it's only a matter of time before, you know, almost all of them are like, yes, let's do this. Because if you can pay for the extra person or two that's building these orders just off of those sales,
yep,
it's, you know, it's kind of an easy decision.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about change management and rollout of change. And that to me is probably in my 20 plus years of doing this, the biggest hindrance to success. It has nothing to do with... so often it has less to do with the technology and or even what the idea was, and so much more to do with execution and did the people adopt what it is that you were looking for?
Yeah, and you know, the ops team is, they're working on making it as simple as possible. We're not adding extra ingredients. We're only using the ingredients that we already have in-house. Packaging, we're looking at like stickers or a stamp versus having 10 separate bags, mm-hmm. right? So using the same bag, put a sticker or stamp it, you know, simple things like that, that aren't going to be, you know, too operationally expensive.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because I've watched so many different brands try different virtual brands out of the same kitchen. It's been fun to watch because I think 2 or 3 years ago when it became more popular, you know, I remember having Sterling Douglas, the founder of Chowly, on the call, yeah. And he and I talked about it, and he's like, yeah, it's so weird because, you know, they had I do equate the virtual brands and even some of the ghost kitchen stuff to like the modern day food trucks. Like, you know, you can get a lot more product in and drive a lot more change. One of our brands, and I talked about them earlier, Torchy's had put a virtual kitchen into a market to see how did it get adopted. Mm-hmm. They saw the fanfare and they're like, okay, we're planting 2 more stores there. And it turned into a test market that was a heck of a lot less expensive than putting a full brick and mortar.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we've done things as far as like, we call them SWAS, store within a store. So we've worked with, you know, Kroger or ShopRite, Giants, and like put smaller stores into a location that's further out. It's not our core markets to kind of test that. And it's absolutely driven us to different areas. And we see, you know, ghost kitchens doing, or virtual kitchens, whatever you want to call them, doing the same thing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put the mic in your hands and tell me, where do you think this stuff's going? You've been doing this for a while. I've been doing this for a while, and I'm always intrigued, and I'm going to let you, you know, what's one prediction that's going to be ubiquitous within our world, maybe 5 or 10 years from now, that you're like, you know what, this is something that I think everybody that, you know, 5% of the market or 2% of the market have it today. You know, think back 15 years ago when Starbucks rolled out gift cards and we're like, nah, come on, those things aren't going to really work. And now it's like foolish to even think that you're not going to have it, or dispatch or third-party delivery. You know, 10 years ago, third-party delivery didn't exist. And now, like, if you don't have it, you're missing out. So where is it going? Where is the industry going? Where is the product going? Where do you think that people need to keep their eye on the ball with stuff that's coming out?
I'm torn here. I think... You know, a kiosk is minimal right now. You know, people have it, but not a ton. You know, obviously you see McDonald's rolling it out to a lot. You know, there's Honeygrow, which is a great brand, and they've gone, you know, heavy into kiosk and smash. Shake Shack has kiosk, but I think kiosk is something that is going to be a lot more ubiquitous. But I'm thinking it's going to be for a short time. I really do see kind of the app and people's phones taking over that role. But I think we're going to see minimal in-store ordering going forward, you know, in the traditional way we have so far. I really do think it's obviously heavy now, but I think kiosk and app-based ordering with takeaway or even dine-in will be, you know, a heavy percentage of visits going forward.
I would agree. I've said it forever. I think point of sale is going to be in your pocket eventually.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the point of sale that's at the center of the store is going to be that aggregator for whether they're solo orders or, you know, but I think eventually less are going to happen at the counter, you know, standing there in front of a cashier.
I mean, I was out with family and we wanted to go to Shake Shack, and the line was crazy even to get to the kiosks. I'm like, well, mm-hmm. I have the app. I'm not going to wait in that line. I'm just going to order from my phone. I ordered from the phone. We sat down, picked up the order a few minutes later, and people were, I'm pretty sure, still waiting in line for the kiosk.
So, I used to do that at Payway when Payway first came out, like Payway first started, and there'd be a line out the door at the store by the office. And I'd be literally standing in the back of the line. I'd walk out one door and go in the other one into the takeout area, and then I'd pick up my food. So ironically, I was at, I was with my daughter at one of those, you know, Chipotle style pizza places earlier this week. And we walked in behind a party of 8 that had never been there. And I'm like, this is painful. And then you got the third party delivery, where 5 third party delivery orders came in while we were standing there watching them make the pizzas for those people, and they only had one pizza maker. It was like, this is painful. I wish I could just order on my app, because if I'd have done that, because my daughter and I were there and we could have done it. I'm going to throw out an idea and love for you, and I know we're getting close to the time. Something that I've been asking a lot of technologists is I continue to see vision and computer learning making their way into our space, whether that's to help a cashier do things better, whether that's to help a cook make sure the food gets prepared properly. With everything going into a box or into a clamshell, it's harder and harder for guest recovery. It's harder and harder. I did an interview a few months ago with a guy that's doing it for pizza. Pizza's relatively simple because it's round and you have a certain amount of pepperonis. Yep. And you have a certain amount of, you know, sausage on it. Where do you think, I mean, do you think that's my prediction that I think 10 years from now, we're going to be like, oh, not necessarily robotics. I don't think there's going to be a robot making your salads in SolidWorks, but I do think that there's going to be some form of electronic quality control related to computer learning or vision learning that's going to impact our industry that we're not even thinking about now.
Yeah. And I'm racking my brain for a name of a product that I can't think of it right now, but I met the gentleman in FS Tech last year. And immediately I saw its usefulness to us. Our biggest issue, and you know, other Chipotle style down the line build something concepts have the same issue, is knowing your, you know, actual versus theoretical food costs. And like when you build a salad and you're, you know, just scooping items onto a salad, you don't know necessarily like, oh, did they get corn on that? Did they get, you know, mm-hmm. did they not want tortilla chips, or did they want an extra set of dressing? You know, we don't build the entire salad on the POS, right? We build it as they go down the line. And if they get something like an extra protein or something that costs money, it gets rung up, but not, you know, every individual item. So the product had, you know, basically cameras overhead, and it saw as they scooped and put mm-hmm. on the salad what those were. And it could, you know, he was talking about at the time, a integration of the POS, where it could do it automatically, or something on the back end. And I think something like that is going to be huge, especially as we see more concepts that are, you know, like Chipotle, like us, that you go down the line and you build it as you go. Because knowing what those, you know, what is actually going into your items is a major win. You know, I've talked about before, like data to us is kind of the key to everything, and the more data, the better. So if you can know, you know, food costs going into it, like what it should be, you know, why you're, you know, are you scooping too heavy on the chicken, right? Something even like that. Those are going to be major.
I love it. I love it. And I do think that that's something that, you know, we need to keep an eye out on the technology side. Well, Kyle, I know that, we probably could talk for another 2 hours, but both of us are hitting up against the time frame. So I really appreciate you coming on, sharing the insight as what you guys are doing at WowWorks. To our audience, guys, we know that, like I said, at the onsite, you guys have got lots and lots of choices of podcasts. So we appreciate you guys taking time with us. If they want to know more about the brand or you personally, how would they get in touch, or how would they check you guys out, Kyle?
Yeah. So, WowWorksUSA.com is our, you know, overall brand site. And then obviously we have SolidWorks.com, Fruitables.com, eGarbanzo, and TheSimpleGreek.com. And then, you know, feel free to, you know, meet up with me on LinkedIn. I'm on there a lot, and would love to connect with as many people as possible.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
To our audience, guys, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.